Welcome to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains. I'm Corby Skinner.
And I'm Jennifer Corning, and we're sharing stories of creative people who live and work in the Intermountain West. Bruce Springsteen bemoaned, "There's 57 channels and nothing on, but many of us find entertainment and insight on Montana PBS. It's truly programming for everyone." For example, November listings included shows for children, Montana history, the 2024 election, car reviews, murder mysteries, and more. Director and general manager Aaron Pruitt is here to take us into the booth and behind the cameras to tell us more about this unique medium.
Welcome, Aaron, and thanks for coming to the Yellowstone Public Radio studios. Would you begin by telling us how this television broadcast service even got started? I think maybe 40 years ago?
Yes, just 40 years ago. And thank you for inviting me to be on the program. Yes, we just celebrated our 40th anniversary. October 1, 2024 marked 40 years from the transmitter being installed and turning on the top of Hedges Dormitory on the Montana State University campus at MSU Bozeman, an antenna and transmitter that was donated to us by Joseph S. Sample.
Well, we at Yellowstone Public Radio owe a lot to Joseph Sample. He was very involved in getting both radio and television out across Montana.
Of course, Joe Sample donated that antenna. Obviously a legendary commercial broadcaster, but Joe cared deeply about public broadcasting and certainly Montana PBS as well, and helped us get off the ground.
So now Montana PBS is a statewide service. Tell me how both Montana State University and the University of Montana are involved.
And so it's really a partnership, literally a partnership where we share resources. We have a common schedule statewide. The fundraising functions, the programming, the operational functions, engineering, all of that takes place at the Bozeman station, because that's the station's existed longer. We had all that infrastructure there since 1984. But the Missoula station is very much focused on production. In fact, our recent U.S. Senate debate between Senator Tester and candidate Sheehy, that took place in our Missoula studio at the It's a great partnership.
But there are some programs that are produced in Bozeman. Isn't 11th and Grant a Bozeman-based production?
Produced at our studio on the corner of 11th and Grant. Some people wonder where we got that name, and we're literally on the corner of 11th and Grant at the MSU Bozeman studio. And that was a program that started back in 2004. We've now produced more than 90 episodes of 11th and Grant with Eric Funk. And it's been it's a program we're very proud of. It's just one of many programs. We produce Ag Live and documentaries, but the ongoing series, 11th and Grant, has been especially fun to produce and to share the great musicians and musicianship that's around the state of Montana under the guidance of our amazing host and artistic director, Eric Funk, kind of a legend in himself in terms of music and his ability to appreciate all kinds of music.
That show alone sounds like it would take an awful lot of staffing.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, working with Missoula and Bozeman, what is your staffing situation?
So we're around 40 right now for Montana PBS, and that includes reporters and producers. For 11th and Grant, key individuals include Eric Funk. He's not an employee, but Scott Sterling is our producer director of that show. And we're working on some really interesting documentary projects.
In addition to the Montana productions, Montana PBS rebroadcast content such as the Ken Burns series, BBC News, Austin City Limits. I'm wondering, how do you procure, and then how do you choose those shows to be appropriate for your audience?
So we're a non-commercial educational broadcaster. And so we have our license from the Federal Communications Commission to broadcast. We choose to be a PBS member station. We could choose tomorrow to not be a PBS member station, and we'd have to go out and find programming to fill our schedule. But right now, we do choose to be a PBS member, and we feel proud of that. We've actually put PBS in our name, so you can understand how, you know, that 75% of that PBS national programming, which includes the great children's programs, the NewsHour, Antiques Roadshow, Ken Burns, that's about 70% of our schedule. And then we buy content. We procure it from other sources, the BBC. We buy some British comedies, dramas. We buy programming from independent producers, and we get it from other program distributors. There's American Public Television. If you've watched our channel ever, sometimes you'll see some of these American Public Television or NETA. There's other distributors other than just PBS. Because PBS is really not a top-down kind of network organization like so many of the commercial broadcasters. We at Montana PBS have complete control of our schedule. So if for some reason, I can't imagine the scenario in which we would decide the next Ken Burns film is something we don't want to air or isn't appropriate for our audience. But if we did want to do that, we could. We could choose not to air a program if we didn't think it fit our audience. Although Ken Burns does have a Leonardo da Vinci documentary coming up here in November, so if you've been looking in your program guide, this is his actually first non-American subject. So that'll be a little different, and it'll be a different style as well. I think we've kind of come used to Ken Burns' style and his narrator, so I'm looking forward to see how he approaches this film. But you know, PBS is very different. We can cherry pick, and actually the PBS programs, PBS nationally, doesn't produce any programs. We don't get national PBS programs. We get programs that are produced by other public television stations, just like us. So WNET, the New York station, produces Nature, great performances. WGBH produces Antiques Roadshow, American Experience. They are the ones that facilitate the Masterpiece Theater programs. Montana PBS has occasionally shared our programs with a national audience. Our Indian Relay film went to national PBS into the national schedule on Independent Lens. Butte America, our film about that community, also went into the national schedule. We've had others like Evelyn Cameron. So we're always, stations can actually push up their local stories, and national PBS curates that and determines like, oh, you know, here's a great story from Montana, from Twin Cities Public Television, from KQED out of San Francisco. But the big producing stations, WETA is the producer of the NewsHour. You know, we're a grassroots organization of stations that come together to build a schedule that we share with the American people. And we insert our local stories. And of course, we're always working on our local programs.
With that size of a staff and all those programs, it sounds very expensive. I'm curious, where does the funding come from?
Right. Yeah, we're roughly a $6 million organization right now in terms of, so really the seed funding that supports public broadcasting in Montana PBS is about a $1.5 million grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. So that's that corporation that was created in 1967 with the Educational Broadcasting Act signed by Lyndon Johnson that got CPB started. And so every public television and public radio station receives a grant. And of course, our grants are larger for television because the costs for both transmission and content are much higher. So we get a grant. We also are, we're part of the university. We're a university employee, so we receive some direct state funding as well, but it flows through the Board of Regents to the station. And in-kind support, too, our facilities, our mountaintop transmitters, our power bills, those kinds of things are supported by the university system. And so we always call it a private-public partnership, the public being the federal money, some state money, university support, and then the private being the viewers like you, the pledge drives. And so much like public radio, we operate in that same way. But the viewers like you is even, it's a kind of a three-legged stool, but the viewers like you for us at Montana PBS is even the strongest leg of that tool, of that stool. That's about $3 million gross revenues from about 23,000 members across the state of Montana. They give $100 or more every year to Montana PBS to support the programs that we do locally and to help us pay that national PBS member bill, which is right now in the $800,000 plus. For it seems like a lot of money, but you think about the amount of content and the services we provide, it's a great value.
Very much like public radio, when we have our fund drives, we always have to reiterate that the money comes from listeners. There is money, some federal money, some grant money, but it's listeners like you that makes the difference. What is that percentage?
So I'd say right now, the viewers like you for us is probably about 45% of our budget. And then the remaining would be an even, pretty much even split between state slash university and then the federal piece. And we do rely on grants. We're applying for grants right now to upgrade our transmitters. Because, you know, in addition to being a broadcaster that's broadcasting content, people don't also realize that we, all of our transmission sites, we have to have generators there. We get grants to support those generators to make sure we don't go off the air.
What about licensing? I am assuming that Montana PBS must abide by FCC, the Federal Communication Commission, in terms of regulations, access to public interest. Are there some challenges that you face specifically in Montana?
I think the biggest challenge for us in Montana, and we're dealing with it right now, is technology upgrades and then trying to reach as much as Montana as possible. I mean, if you can imagine your Twin Cities public television, you put up 1,000-foot tower and you put an antenna on it, and you've reached most of the audience in that country. Here in Montana, we have a lot of geography. We have a lot of geography that gets in the way in terms of trying to reach mountaintops and terrain. And then we are upgrading that equipment all the time. And in fact, we're waiting upon a federal grant right now to upgrade our transmitters in Helena and in Great Falls. Microwave is how we deliver our signal. We're having to upgrade that. We're in a business that's, you know, technology, production technology, 5 to 6 years, and then it's got to be replaced. Broadcast technology, maybe 10, 15, maybe 20. There's actually a new broadcast standard coming now called Next Gen TV. You may remember from analog to digital in 2009, everybody turned off their analog transmitters and we all went to digital television. Well, there's another change coming, and it's Next Gen TV. And some of your new televisions have those tuners, some of them do not. This is not a mandated change by the FCC yet. But we are already having to invest millions of dollars in the next broadcast technology, which means basically just a much bigger pipe. Right now we broadcast 5 channels, so our primary channel, Create, World, Kids. We were one of the first stations in the nation in 2009 to actually start a 24/7 kids channel. And then MPAN, the legislative channel. We do all that right now. With Next Gen TV, we could do more of that. We could broadcast data. It's still kind of being worked out exactly what we will do as broadcasters with the ATSC, but it's being rolled out in other markets across the nation already.
In terms of programming, a lot of it is originated by your staff. I know that Montana viewers are familiar with your political coverage, Backroads of Montana, other special programming. How do you decide what to produce? Is there a board? Who really makes those decisions?
So we have a director of content that's responsible for what gets into the schedule. I served in that role for more than 20 years. And I would say that, you know, we do have a Friends of Montana PBS board, which is an advisory board, advocacy and fundraising. We get some feedback from that board, but it's not a formal process. The editorial decisions for the station are at the local level with the director of content and then within our production teams at both stations. We've been a while. We're about due to sit down again as a production team from both stations at both universities to sit down and prioritize what do we think in terms of the next documentary projects we should tackle. How about our impact series? That's a series now that's two years old. We're very proud of the work that series is doing. And in fact, 6 segments of that have ended up on PBS NewsHour nationally most recently. In fact, Stan Parker here, his most recent piece just a couple of weeks ago, and it was used by PBS NewsHour. So we're proud of that news and public affairs work. We're going to continue to invest in that. What's the next documentary project? Sometimes that comes from internal. We have a list of projects we'd like to do. I mean, Jeanette Rankin's a documentary we'd love to do someday. It's been on the list forever. We haven't found just the right producer that can tackle that. You do have to have producers that get excited about a project and want to tackle it. Sometimes, for us, it's a combination of an internal producer that makes a connection with an independent producer. A lot of great ideas come to us from independent producers. In fact, the Johnny Jankowski film was an independent producer we worked with on our Ivan Doig film. So the Ivan Doig film, we determined internally we wanted to do that because Ivan Doig's collection had come to the MSU library and we saw an opportunity. And so that was an internal decision to get going on that project. In the process, we worked with an independent producer that had to get it done, and she subsequently came back to us and said, "Do you know who Johnny Jankowski is? And do you know this story?" And then as soon as she pitched it, we were like, "Okay, we get it." And so that project is actually in fine cut, and I think will release next year. Another one's an internal one. You know, we've worked with writers and independent producers, but the writer that wrote the biography of Charlie Russell, John Taliaferro, out of Paradise Valley, was amazing to work with. It's important sometimes if you're telling like Charlie Russell's story to have a historian, a writer that has done all that research work that you can put in the front of a camera, and if they're compelling, that's the beginnings of a documentary, when you have a storyteller that can sit there and tell that story. He recently, fairly recently, did a biography on George Bird Grinnell. Think of Grinnell Glacier. Fascinating man. So we are in the process of working with them and probably halfway through production on a George Bird Grinnell document.
Another book by John, actually. I first met John Taliaferro when Charlie Russell first came out, and he came to our book festival. And he read and sort of talked about Charlie Russell and did an amazing amount of research. And the audience didn't necessarily want to know all the research and the details. He becomes sort of an icon of cowboy Western life. And John uncovered some interesting things about the story. John, if you're listening, we look forward to the Grinnell series coming up. And I love the fact that those shows are so unique and specific to Montana. Do you see more programs coming out of and about Montana? And what is that percentage with what you bring in?
I don't know that I have a percentage. You know, one of the things that we focus on, and you've got Impact, which is news and public affairs. You know, that's probably about right now with the new shows per season. Of course, we in public television, we're always repeating our past documentaries, Butte America, Classy Girls Basketball is back in November because we have some other new basketball films coming. Actually, The House That Rob Built, we should talk about that. That's a great film coming. So we're always repeating our old films. You know, the George Bird Grinnells or the Johnny Jankowski films, those are multiple years in production. So they take a lot of more effort to put those into those. But, you know, probably, 10 to 15 hours of original new production every year. And some of, you know, Ag Live itself is probably 17 just by itself, but it's just a straightforward studio program. Original new production of documentaries is probably in the 3 to 4 hours of our own production. But one of the things we do, like The House That Rob Built, is we broadcast independent films that come to us that are basically done and ready to broadcast. And our audience really doesn't care whether we produced them or an independent did. And we love to actually air and distribute those Montana stories, no matter where they've come from. So if you added up, you know, all of the Montana content, and you find that in our program guide in that first section, it's a couple pages of Montana content in a given month. Repeat and new, you know, is probably, you know, 8 to 10 hours of content that might be, you know, your favorite Butte America. People still love to watch Butte America. It's a 20-year-old film or Indian Relay. But, you know, also to see what's new in the schedule. We have Native Ball coming in this month, which is a relatively new film, independent film. So, I mean, I don't have exact numbers, and it fluctuates mm-hmm. every month, but that gives you a sense of... I tend to think of us as a library in some way as well. We make great films. We hope we make them at such a level that they resonate with audiences, whether it's like the Class C film or Butte America or the Evelyn Camera film, that 20 years on, they still feel fresh and new. And you know, so I'll talk to people and say, well, I was the first time I saw that Class C film. And I'm like, well, you know, we've aired it many, many times over the years, but there's new audiences all the time.
I actually worked with Pam on Butte America when it first came out, and I was just helping her in terms of promoting the film itself. And there was some resistance just thinking like, oh, this is just like a local production. But I think it is such a fabulous series. I can imagine people, I mean, 20 years ago, the story is still there. You can show that again, and you're reaching new audiences all the time.
One of the things we do as well with our programs that make them live beyond broadcast and reach to a new generation is the way in which we take every film and we create PBS learning media content about it. It's free to every Montana educator. It's actually free to every educator in the United States on the national PBS learning media platform. So our films live on beyond and reach new generations in that way as well. And that's part of, we are a non-commercial educational broadcaster, and education is part of our DNA. It's not just about lifelong learning and great documentaries that appeal to an adult audience. We're also very focused on the next generation of viewers and Montanans.
Well, the production team at Montana PBS has received multiple regional Emmy Awards. So here's your chance to brag. tell us about some of those awards over the years.
Oh, I mean, there's just so many favorite titles that I've had the privilege to work on. You know, certainly 11th Grant, we've talked about that one. But some films that I think are our senior producer, Kyle Sorensen, did on the Mission Mountain Woodband documentary. That also won an Emmy in that year. And that's, you know, it's got some age on it, that film, too. You know, the Class C film picked up Emmys as well. The Charlie Russell film, you know, Indian Relay. I mean, I guess, you know, with, I take pride in them mostly when we're telling Montana PBS stories. I think, you know, that's what we're always coming back to is we love to tell Montana stories about Montana people, places. We like to do it at the very highest quality possible. And that usually means that it's going to take time. It might take multiple years. It might sometimes frustrate our funders. It's like, when is that film going to be done? We are going to get George Bergenell done. Yes, we will. But we're trying to do it the right way, in a way that we create a film that resonates with audiences and tells a great story, and not just in Montana, because a lot of times, many of these films, we will then take them and share them with national PBS, and we'll pitch them to either PBS, American Public Television, and even if it doesn't end up in the national PBS primetime schedule, which obviously is kind of the holy grail, we'd love to have that happen every time. But there are other ways for other public television stations to carry the Charlie Russell film. So we made the Charlie Russell 3-hour film, which is great for Montana audiences. But we knew all along that 3 hours was a lot. I mean, it was kind of a good companion to John's biography, although his biographies are in length. But we did a 1-hour version that national PBS said, yeah, that's a great story. And so it's airing nationally even now on public television stations around the nation. So we love to take local Montana stories and elevate them to national audiences. I'm really proud right now of a particular film that the next time you're on a Delta flight anywhere in the world, it just released. Indian Relay is now on Delta In-Flight Entertainment. That is our a first for us. So that's kind of fun, and that's almost that's a 15-year-old film, but it's a great Montana story of our native communities and a very positive story, artfully told. So.
Well, in the past couple of years, Montana State University and Montana PBS braved an almost $20 million campaign to expand the Visual Communications Building, which is also the home of Montana PBS. Are you done? What was the result of that? Where are you in this project?
I would say, I don't know if you've ever done fundraising, and particularly with construction costs, they present an interesting challenge. But the exciting news is we have a groundbreaking date this spring for the first expansion of Montana PBS in our 40-year history. We will be expanding on the corner of 11th and Grant with a roughly 16,000 square foot addition that will include a new classroom, studio space, offices for Montana PBS to actually bring our team back together. We've been separated for some time now because we simply ran out of room over the last 40 years. We did raise and have raised approximately $21 million. I wish the goalposts on construction wouldn't keep moving. It makes it very challenging. But there's a lot of enthusiasm and support, and also support right on our campus and from our president. President Cruzado has been behind and understood how public television in our life learning mission aligns with Montana State University's mission. And so she's been a big proponent on campus and has helped secure some of that funding as well. And then we've received support from our board members and members across the state of Montana from every community. So that's very heartwarming. It is exciting. It is an expansion of our facility in Bozeman, yes. But it also envisions, and this is the Building Possibilities campaign, it envisions expanding our education and our programming staff, not just in Bozeman, but also at our Missoula station and other communities as we can embed them. And of course, we have Stan Parker embedded here in Billings. We hope to repeat that model in other parts of the state as we grow and have enough capacity to do that. But the $3 million on top of it. So we, you know, this was a campaign that started 6 years ago with a $12 million building project. The building project now is considerably higher than that, and time just marches on and the construction costs do, but we're going to get it done. And in fact, we're going to break ground this spring.
I'm interested, because it's on campus, what is the access for students? Are there classes there? Do you utilize some of the college students?
Absolutely. In terms of Montana PBS and our roots clear back in 1984, I walked through the door of the Visual Communications Building in 1984 as a freshman, and I was assigned this professor as my advisor, Jack Hippa. who was just starting a brand new television station. And of course, he changed my life. I thought I was going to be a still photographer because that had been my background in 4-H. But he said, well, we've got this television station here, and it's storytelling, but just with moving pictures and sound instead of still photography. And so I was able to engage as a student producer, and I worked for the student producing documentaries and interstitials, promotions in the operations center back when we signed on in the morning and signed off at night and shut the lights off. We still do that. We have many student employees that are producing content for air, and we also employ students to produce live sports coverage for all of the MSU athletic games. So football, men's, women's, basketball, volleyball. In fact, this is a very busy month for all the ESPN Plus coverage of MSU athletics. It's actually students behind the scenes.
Oh, doing really?
Camera, oh. Graphic design, instant replay, directing the program. I have two professional staff, and the rest of the crew is all students getting direct hands-on experience, just like I did, just like many of my different, many of our staff did. When they leave us after 2 or 3 years of employment, they are ready to work for ESPN.
Over the years, certainly programs must have changed and evolved. How do you keep track of who's watching?
If somebody records something, the devices they might be watching on, their cable television box, maybe it's the DVR that they have, anything is live plus 7 still counts. And so we still know from Nielsen data, Nielsen media research data, that 275,000 approximately Montanans tune to Montana PBS every single week in the state of Montana. And that's just our primary channel, not even counting all the other channels. And then broadcasting has become complicated for it because it's only one way that our viewers watch us. Now they watch on demand on the PBS app, on their phone, on their iPad, on their computer. And so we now need to be present and on demand on all these other platforms. So it's a complex business. We're still broadcasters, but we're also delivering content on all these other ways and YouTube and trying to measure those audiences. And it does get a little complicated.
So what excites you as we move forward into the new year, new building, new projects?
I mean, all of those things. We're working on new transmission projects. I mean, I have a director of technology, but the things he's doing in terms of leadership of getting us on mountaintops that we currently aren't on, communities that I can't really talk about yet, but I'm hoping that we're going to bring actually free over-the-air public television to some smaller communities in Montana. That's exciting. It's fun to be contemplating that and improving our coverage map. The new documentary projects, we have another one in the works. It's a film about Cook City. So there's those. I think the education work that we're doing, we're about to stand up a brand new youth media project where we're going to actually be working with teachers. We have hired a new position to go into high schools to help youth in high schools produce media, potentially for our own broadcast, and even eventually maybe NewsHour as well. We do a little bit of that with NewsHour reporting labs, so that exists now. But we're going to be doing more helping high school students produce content of their interest areas, potentially on our digital platforms and maybe even for broadcast, and help give them the tools to start becoming storytellers even in high school.
I love that that's the way to reach a whole new generation of people watching Montana PBS. We've been talking with Aaron Pruitt, the executive director, manager, main guy at Montana PBS. Aaron, thank you so much for joining us here in the radio studio. We will have more information about Montana PBS and contact information on our website at YP Radio. Aaron, thank you for coming.
Thank you for inviting me.
You've been listening to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains, produced by Corby Skinner, Jennifer Corning, and Ken Siebert for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music by Alex Nauman. Hear this program anytime online at ypradio.org.